Number one.
From the number one college town in the Big 12. We're back with the Purple Project Podcast with Eddie Greer.
The Purple Project Podcast is on. Going behind the scenes of Kansas State athletics, from the action on the gridiron to the octagon of doom, and much more. Plus, making rounds about the happenings in the community. Triple P is loud and proud and ready to take charge in the Big 12 Conference. Podcasting to the Little Apple, Kansas City, and the world. It's the Purple Project Podcast. And now, here's your host, Eddie Greer III.
What's going on, K-State Nation? We are still unbeaten in the Big 12. This is the Purple Project Podcast. Once again, here in Manhattan, Kansas, Eddie Greer III, host of the K-State Podcast, where, of course, we talk about all things purple. The battle of the purples went down yesterday in a close, tightly battle with K-State coming on top, escaping Fort Worth, and I mean escaping, 21-14 over the TCU Horned Frogs. Before I bring on Alex on, my co-host, of course, the Purple Project Podcast. Find it wherever you get your podcast. Apple, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Audio Boom, Radio.com, SoundCloud, and our newest edition that I talked about last week's episode, Amazon Music. We are on there as well. So if you have Alexa anywhere in your home, you can tell Alexa to play the Purple Project Podcast and it should light it up for you wherever you're at your home or whatever you're doing. So that is that as well. Victory Sunday night, of course, recording it just over 24 hours. The Battle of the Purples went down in Fort Worth. A defensive game. As expected, the Wildcats coming out on top 21-14. It's time to bring on my co-host for the post-game usually as well, Alex Aiden, always from, he lives out in San Diego. Alex, what is going on this Sunday night?
You know, Eddie, there's a lot of things going through my head right now. First off, I have to apologize in advance. I've mentioned Ella to you guys before, and I've said I'm sorry if she interferes show. All I have to say is I don't know what's up with her right now, but she is flying around here like a million miles an hour. So in advance, if you hear me, get distracted because she's getting into something that she shouldn't, which is a pretty common occurrence. Hopefully she'll calm down and take a nap and we can just do this podcast uninterrupted, but she is not obeying at the moment. In regards to sports, obviously, a great win for K-State yesterday. Excited to get into that. And then, everybody knows that you're a big Atlanta fan. I'm a big Kansas City fan. A lot going on in each sports city right now. My Chiefs just had a clunker today against the Raiders. They looked awful. And so, thank goodness for K-State winning yesterday to keep my sanity. Although the Chiefs will be fine. Don't worry, everybody. Everybody has a clunker now and again. It's not a big deal. Happens every now and again. You're not going to go 16-0. But still, it sucks to lose the Raiders. And then with Atlanta, baseball and football. Baseball, Atlanta, NLCS, super exciting. I remember the Royals NLCS appearances in 2014 and 2015. Against the Orioles and the Blue Jays, both were just tremendously exciting series, and I'm sure it'll be the same thing with the Braves and the Dodgers series. So I bet you're super pumped about that, Evie. And then, So the Falcons are 0-5, but your guy is out as the Falcons head coach. So hey, that's got to be a step in the right direction for you too.
Yeah, we're in us Atlanta fans. We've been asking for it, really begging for it since last year when we were 1-7. So. Yeah, they did this too late, way too late, and I hate it. We'll transfer to K-State momentarily, but yeah, I hate it for Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, especially wasting their talents with in the prime of their careers and going out like this, 0-5. Going down the toilet hole really fast. So Yeah, glad that is finally done, but they did this way too late. So hopefully the GM, Thomas Dimitroff, can pack up his bags too tomorrow. So that's gotta be a package deal there. Start over from the top bottom. That's what a couple of my friends have already said that I talked with really for the last several weeks. So just start it over and hopefully, well, when the season is finally mercifully over, they can go out, Rich McKay can go out and find a GM and a head coach compact. Obviously, at least around the Atlanta parts, at least, there's been Eric Bieniemy, your guy's name's been coming up a lot. So
I was about to say, Eddie, that I think that was what I was going to say a second ago, is that, you know, Atlanta is a team that had a culture of under Dan Quinn post 28-3 against the Patriots. From that moment on, they really just had a culture of losing and blowing leads and things like that. And Eric Bieniemy is, well, he's a handful of things, but the two biggest things that come out, I think, Eric Bieniemy are, number one, he's a winner. He wins where he goes. And number two, he's a leader of men. He holds guys accountable, and he is not a pushover, and he's going to get in your face, whether you like it or not, but he's also going to love on you, you know, and be there for you and understand it's bigger than football. And just based on conversations that you and I have had watching the Falcons, it seems like that's something that they could use. Someone who
definitely, you know,
is them accountable and who has a proven winner. And also, on top of that, Eddie, I mean, he's just a tremendous offensive mind. So, you know, you get a guy like him in there in Atlanta, I feel like he could be a perfect fit. I really do.
Yeah, and keyword, hold everybody accountable. There's just too much talking about the players going to bat for Dan Quinn for really so long that, you know, the guys aren't performing on the field. Yeah. So there's just something's not right there. I mean, rehiring Dirk Cutter was a bad move. I'm sorry, that was a bad move. Should have hired somebody else to call the offensive plays. I mean, we have, you got me going down this road, but Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, Todd Gurley, emerging star and Calvin Ridley, Hayden Hurst, those type of weapons, you got to produce, and they have not done that. So, and pretty much this was the shit right here. Losing to Carolina, you're out. And Atlanta proved it, so Dan Quinn's gone, and I'll definitely be looking at what's going to happen with the GM, Thomas Dimitroff. I definitely think he should go, and a lot of the Falcon faithful agree with me 100%. Now, I'm currently recording a podcast now, and I have the ALCS on right now. Obviously, the volume down. So, yeah, I'm pumped up with the NLCS finally back since 2001, a long drought for the Braves. Very pumped up. And obviously, the Dodgers, if they're going to get back to the World Series, they're going to have to go through us.
And
so,
Eddie, I hope people go back to you and I right before the baseball season began. We had a bit of a baseball discussion in one of our podcasts. And I said to you, at that time, I said, look, Eddie, I'm really high on the Braves. I think that the team they're going to have to get through is going to be the Dodgers. But look, the Dodgers are notorious for falling apart in moments like this. So, you know, but my prediction was that it would be a Braves, come down to the Braves and Dodgers and the NL, and that's exactly what's happened. Now, the Dodgers have looked like dynamite. I'm out here in San Diego.
Well, obviously, yeah.
I'm a Kansas City, obviously I'm a Kansas City Royals fan, die hard, through and through, always will be. But, you know, being part of San Diego, I watch the Padres. I'm pretty close to you know, with what's happening with them, and I cheer for them. You know, in the for the most part in the NL, and so I saw them against the Dodgers, and I obviously get to see the Dodgers a lot because I'm only a couple hours from LA. So I can tell you that Dodgers team is legit. They look like a different. They look like they don't look like the Dodgers teams that have crumbled in years past. Mookie Betts on that team just seems like it's just totally just. Like, been an injection of talent and energy for them. But at the same time, I have seen them multiple times said no. I've seen him say multiple times. He just since I've been out here the last couple of years, I've seen him twice just crumble in the biggest moments. So, you know, I think that's going to be a really good series. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, definitely. Same as well. We're definitely excited for that tomorrow night. Really all week. So that's going to be the key there. Seven games max, obviously. No days off. So that could play a factor in that. So we'll see what happens. The ALCS is currently going on right now as we record this podcast. 2-1 Tampa Bay right now in the top of the seventh, I believe. Yeah, top of the seventh right now. This is commercial break. So, yeah, kind of doing double duty there on aspects. So, yeah, speaking of the Padres, yeah, they got ousted by the Dodgers there a few days ago. So, yeah, and saw a great ending to the Rays-Yankees series the other night. My goodness, that was a game there. And Yankees getting knocked out of the playoffs. So, we'll see what happens in the offseason with them. But, yep, Braves, Dodgers, tomorrow night starts tomorrow night. Can't wait for that. Meanwhile, K-State 3-0 in the Big 12 Conference, y'all. 3-0 K-State Nation after falling to Arkansas State. And like one of my friends earlier said today, one for the Arkansas State clunker, K-State would be undefeated right now. But instead, they got a 3-1 and to the bye week. And they're still with a three-way tie with Iowa State and Oklahoma State heading into the bye week in the conference. K-State escaping Fort Worth with a 21-14 win in one of the more... Going back to the end of that game yesterday, man, I was not happy. I mean, obviously, we're all not perfect, me included. But, man, a championship coach like Chris Klieman... In that situation, especially in the final drive there, we caught our break right there. I mean, calling a timeout, leaving TCU time there, and then the penalty by Wyatt Hubert, another mental error by your Big 12 performer. I mean, this is, what, four or five times now for Wyatt Hubert, and Wyatt Hubert, he caught a break there. Obviously, it was no targeting call on that, but man, you have to be smarter than that. But overall, the story coming out of this for me, overall, we'll touch on the offense first in this half of the podcast tonight. It was defense. I mean, I said it a little bit of the preview show that you got to slow down Max Duggan, and they hounded, they beat up Max Duggan yesterday. Yeah. It took a toll, and then they picked off the backup quarterback there, A.J. Parker. It turned out to be the difference maker. Huge difference maker there. Hey, if this K-State defense plays what they did yesterday, the rest of the Big 12 schedule better watch out. Because right now, I mean, just the emergence of Justin Gardner, Boyd Doe, these corners that we talked about, Alex, back in the Oklahoma, they're starting to really settle in here to their roles. A.J. Parker, the move to nickel has paid dividends. Example, yesterday's game. That's what I take out from it. Of course, Will Howard making his first official start for K-State there. Not pretty numbers. Wasn't pretty, but we got the victory. Before we talk offense, Alex, what are your thoughts on the game yesterday?
Yeah, you know, just to kind of give my initial takeaways, Eddie, you know, before we dive into the, you know, the offense, defense, upstairs, all that stuff. The initial takeaways, the first one and the biggest one was how big this win was. Huge win. I have said so many times in this podcast, talked about the TCU being mildly underrated.
yeah, you did, yeah.
I've mentioned that a lot, and yes, I do believe they're mildly underrated, but look, that's still a good Big 12 football team. I mean, it's not a bad team. You know, that's still a good team. You know, does Gary Patterson have what he used to know? He doesn't seem to have the same velocity on his fastball, so to speak, to use a baseball reference. But, you know, he still knows how to coach, and he really still knows how to coach defense. And TCU defenses are good every single year. So, going into the game, you had a banged-up offensive line that is still relatively new and learning things. And you had a quarterback making his first career start on the road against that TCU defense I went in thinking, oh man, this is a tall task. If Chris Kleiman can find a way to come out and get a win, you know, that's just another, another really big accomplishment for him, something that you can really just kind of put on as accomplishment. By the way, congratulations to Chris Kleiman for his much well-deserved contract extension.
We'll talk about that on the end of the podcast. Later, yeah.
Definitely, well, much, very deserving of that. Just had to get that in there, right there. But no, so, you know, Chris Kleiman, I thought it was just huge. It was huge for him to be able to prepare this team to go into TCU and to get a win. Yes, the end of the game, Eddie, I know had some people scratching their heads. Me personally, I didn't have a problem with it. I know that some people did have a problem with it, had a problem with the timeout. And some people had a problem with the QB draw out of the timeout and some of those things. Or not the QB draw, the QB sneak, I believe it was. But, for me, I didn't have that much of a problem with it just because, you know, K-State's defense would be getting stops. I didn't think the time differential would be much of a difference. And you know what? I never have an issue with QB sneaks for the most part. You know, typically it's a really high percentage play. And so, you know, I just didn't have a problem with the way that did. Look, if Will Howard just slipped it was like an RPO play, and then he took it, he had the yardage, and he just fell. He just fell down.
I didn't have a problem with that. No, I didn't have it with the play.
I didn't have a problem with that either. You know, he gets that one. We're not even talking about this. You know, K-State gets first down, they take a knee, and the game's over. So, I feel like we can nitpick. And like I said, I've heard a lot of discussion around that, and I just didn't feel like it was a huge effect in the game. Granted, TCU should have never gotten as far down as they did. I think the 39-yard line should have never gotten that. And I don't know what that was. Why viewer, he had two more head scratching penalties. He lined up offsides, which is just, that's just a lack of discipline. And then I didn't think it was roughing the passer, Eddie. I heard most people say they thought it was. I still don't think it was. Definitely wasn't targeting. I see that a lot. QBs get hit right after they throw it, and there's not a flag. But still, regardless of that, don't hit a quarterback on the last play of the game on a Hail Mary. There's just no need to do it. Just pull up. There's just no reason to do that. So I still view that as an undisciplined play, even though I didn't feel like it was a penalty. So I don't know what's going on with White Huber, but you do still have to give White Huber credit because he and Cooley Duke are commanding a lot of, they're really demanding a lot of attention, and it's allowing K-State to be able to rush the passer with four effectively. And that was another big takeaway for me, is that K-State bullied TCU. They bullied TCU, especially when they were on defense, and they were able to get pressure with four again, which helps the secondary. And it helps, K-State can drop more guys back. I mean, they can drop more guys back. When you can get pressure with four, and you can drop seven back in coverage, I mean, that's the best, in my opinion, the best defense right there. That's the best strategy. And yes, I've talked on the show about getting creative with blitzes and stuff like that, but, you know, if you can get pressure with four, there's no need to blitz. So, you got to give K-State credit for that. And then to flip it to the offensive side real quick in my takeaways, it was not pretty. The K-State offense did not play very well. I thought that there was some more coaching not to lose late in that game when K-State was up 21-7. But at the same time, I didn't have a huge problem with it because you're on the road against TCU. Your defense is playing so well because K-State's defense was playing great. I didn't have the same issue that I had against Texas Tech. Oh, against Texas Tech, I had an issue with it because Texas Tech was getting hot and their offense was getting rolling. And Texas Tech's defense is a defense that you can expose and you can take advantage of with some of the right plays schemed up. Against TCU, TCU's coverage was locked. I mean, they locked on those receivers all day long. The receivers could not get any separation. And K-State's defense was getting stopped. So with the way TCU is playing defensively, having Will Howard making his first career start, having the defense play the way they were, I didn't have as much of an issue with K-State being more conservative in their offensive play calling. I still wish they would have loosened things up more. But all in all, they made enough plays offensively. And for Will Howard, you know, he's got his first win as a starter. Based on what I've heard, it sounds like he is probably going to be the long-term QB moving ahead in the season, because after the game, Coach Kleiman said, you know, we'll talk more about Skyler on Monday, so by the time people are listening to this, they'll probably have heard.
Probably know by then, yep.
Yep, that you and I haven't heard, and based on what I have heard from some of the K-State insiders, it sounds like we should be banking on something that's going to be a longer-term injury. So we should probably be getting used to Will Howard being the starter. And you know what, Eddie? I think that's fine. I said last week that while K-State's ceiling this year is not as high with Will Howard as it is Skyler, because I don't believe it is, still, you know, K-State, they got a bye. And then after the bye, they've got KU at home. And then they go to West Virginia. And he just got his first win at TCU. And then he got a win coming in against Texas Tech. So I think things set up really nicely to kind of ease Will Howard in and get him more comfortable so he can be playing at a higher level in those big games on the back end of the schedule. It's going to be harder to make a Big 12 championship push with Will Howard than it would be Skyler. There's no doubt about that. But I think things set up well for him. And on top of that, you know, it's bigger, it's bigger than just this year. I mean, this is going to make Will Howard just that much better for next year, that much better for 2 years from now. I'm not, as much of a bummer as it would be to lose Skyler long term, I do think that this could be a blessing in disguise. I think K-State can still compete with Will Howard as the quarterback. So, it's a long-winded, that's a long-winded answer for my key takeaways, but defense was dynamite. Offense didn't play great, but they did just enough to win. And then just huge for K-State to be able to get that win and stay undefeated looking at those two games that they have coming up, Kansas and West Virginia, because you knew if you can just find a way to get out of TCU, Eddie, if we can just find a way to get out of TCU, get away with the win, then things are set up really nicely for K-State to begin the season 5-0 on conference play. And you and I talked about this in our preview show before the season started, Eddie. The front end of the schedule was friendly to K-State. And mm-hmm. they had the potential to get a lot of Big 12 wins and set themselves up to be playing meaningful games on the back half of their Big 12 schedule. And getting this TCU win really sets K-State up in a position to possibly be 5-0 going into their game against Oklahoma State.
And good possibility.
You know, those are the two teams that are undefeated right now with K-State. So, you know, just huge for them to be able to get that win, stay undefeated, going into the bye, then the KU and West Virginia game.
Talked about this on the last, not the preview show, but the one before that on the Purple Project. K-State now officially 3-0 in Big 12 play for the first time since 2014 and the sixth time in their 25-year history of the league. So definitely they got the win, huge win to get on the road against TCU. They got by TCU, which they did. Now you have a bye, and they have KU and West Virginia looming up next for K-State. But, of course, we'll talk a whole lot about KU next week on the podcast. But right now we're talking about TCU on the Pro Project podcast, and that's a nice transition to the offensive side of the ball. With Will Howard, yeah, it was not pretty. Oh, he had that long run early in the game, right up the gut. TCU weren't ready for that. They were not ready for that. 80 yards to set up that field goal there by Blake Lynch there to set the tone for K-State there. Yeah, this offense took a step back. Here yesterday, yes, with this backup quarterback, but they did not have Skyler in there. And yeah, you touched on it, Alex. Yeah, we won't know anything else until tomorrow when this podcast comes out midweek. We'll know a whole lot more about the situation. But yeah, let's get comfortable with Will Howard, folks. 8 of 19 for only 117 yards, but he rushed 13 times for 86. 80 of it, pretty much 96% of that on that play. So
yeah.
TCU, they got after it on defense like we knew we would. Gary Patterson's blueprint is that defense there for TCU there. Deuce Vaughn, only 43 yards for 14 carries in this one. He had a 45-yard reception there, which was a good yards after the catch. What we've seen already this part of the season from Deuce right there. Bronny Moore made a catch there as well. I don't have the receiver stat, but again, the receivers were, other than Sebastian Taylor converting a two-point conversion there, there is no production from the wide receivers again. So somehow, some way, we're 3-1 without much wide receiver production, even though Sebastian Taylor has caught a couple of touchdown passes, though. But yeah, we're 3-1 and without wide receiver production. But I think I might be butchering it. His name, I have it here. Let me switch to my screen, to my other screen here real quick. He was a factor in the passing game. DJ Renner. Yesterday, three catches for 24 yards. So he to me was the more consistent of the receivers. And yes, Sebastian Taylor, the only receiver on here, two catches for 10 yards. Bronny Moore, I said he had a catch, he had another catch, so two catches for 38. And Deuce Vaughn, that lone catch for a big, 45 yards there as a Ray player got hit. There, as I look there, I believe the same guy who hit the home run off Chapman the other night just got nailed in the shoulder. Sorry, folks. A little ADD. But, so it wasn't pretty there offensively. Let me get down to the numbers here real quick. I just had it up here momentarily. There we go. So, K-State, under 300 yards, total offense, 289. Pass yards only 117, rushing yards 172, penalties 4 for 45 yards, only 12 first downs there, third down conversions, they're awful, 3 of 13 there, and a fourth down, they were 100% there, and yes, that Will Howard, if he doesn't trip there in the fourth quarter, we're not having this discussion of Wyatt Hubert running into the quarterback, so yeah, I mean, the defense stepped up, and we'll talk about defense in the next half of the program here. But yeah, so Will Howard, going forward, K-State fans. So you also hit on something, Alex. There, this is valuable experience for Will Howard in what everybody's calling a throwaway season, which I hate that word. But in this instance here, Will Howard, this is huge experience next year. For next year, and obviously with Jake Rubley coming here, boy oh boy, K-State's set on quarterback, and that's going to be a heck of a battle next year. But for right now, just focusing on the moment now, Will Howard once again leading his team to a victory here. I'm going to go straight in to the grade here. I'm gonna give the offense, man, with TCU's defense, man, I'm going to say... Yeah, with Skylar out, I'm gonna say a C. I'll be honest with you here. Going forward, you hope that Will Howard improves. And you mentioned something also, Alex, about playing not to lose once again on this podcast. I even said it on the TCU preview show last episode. I mean, you have to open up the playbook a little bit and not play to lose. And K-State almost did that. In this instance here, I mean, at some point or another, yes, he's only a freshman quarterback, but we've seen from random times, at least when Will Howard's in the game, that he can make the throws, but yesterday obviously wasn't there yesterday, so with the lack of production still on the receiver side, which I've harped on, and I'm sorry to be a dead horse, it's the obvious point here. If K-State's going to be still in the mix for a Big 12 appearance late in the year, they're going to have to find something there. But for right now, it's not pretty, but they're getting by what they need on the offensive side of the ball. So I'll give them an average grade, a C, for yesterday's performance there. So it was, again, was not pretty, but K-State once again finds a way in typical K-State fashion to get that win. You can thank A.J. Parker for that. Again, we'll touch on A.J. Parker on the next half of the podcast after the intermission. So that is my grade, and I'm gonna go do special. I'm gonna do some special teams right now. Special teams was huge in this game. Blake Lynch knocking down a couple of field goals. I believe he missed one, if I'm not mistaken. He was 2 of 3. Now that I remember correctly, he did miss one there. So K-State caught a break there on that instance there. But there was a stat here I want to bring up here. Blake Lynch knocking down a 53-yard field goal. That was his new, it was his new career-long yesterday in the game. And, of course, he hit a 50-yarder last. So Blake Lynch finally getting his legs underneath him, even though he missed another field goal yesterday in the game. Oh, boy. And Ty Zentner was big in the punt game. Hit in the second half a 65-yard punt that pinned TCU deep in their territory. And that was the, that tied the longest by a Wildcat since our guy Devin Ankdo did it against Oklahoma back in 2018. So the special team was huge. They did not get a block punt, but they did get a block field goal attempt by our guy, our favorite person on the podcast, Wyatt Hubert. So Wyatt Hubert, he was making his presence known all over the place, including the end of the game. So I gave the special teams a straight-up B. Great job all around. So the streak of 3 punt blocks come to an end there, but they get a punt, they get a block on the field goal side of it. So that's 4 straight games, if you want to count it, folks, of blocks. If a punt block for your punt block for our, I cannot say the word, dang it. But anyways, of the variety, there is of the variety of the punting version, or you can call it the kick, the field goal version. So a good day for the K-State special teams once again in that aspects there. So Alex, I'm gonna let you have at it here. That's all I got for the K-State offense, because there weren't much to write home about yesterday. So what are your grades on the offense and the special teams?
Yeah, not a lot to say when it comes to the offense.
I mean, that was a lot. That was a mouthful for me. So
I actually do have a lot to say on the K-State offense. People who know me in sports actually know I usually have a lot to say, regardless of probably what we're talking about. So with the K-State offense, first off, with that Will Howard run, it was something. God, of course, Courtney Messingham, credit for scheming that run up. It was something that they saw in film this past week on TCU's defense, where when Will Howard was talking about after the game, he said, you know, we knew when we were in that formation that it would be open for us. We knew it. I mean, we saw how they were acting, or how they, you know, responded to certain looks, and we knew it would be there. And so, you know, it was a play that was schemed up prior to the game, and like I said, you've got to give credit for to Courtney Messingham for finding a way to scheme that up and for K-State to get on the board first. That was really big, in my opinion, for K-State to get a stop and then to get a score and to follow it up with a score, especially when it was so hard for K-State to really manufacture points in this game. So, you know, credit there to him. And same thing, if you go back and watch last year's game, which I'm sure no one's doing. I'll just tell you guys what happened. Last year, I don't know how many of you remember, but the game was tied 17-17. And then K-State ended up driving down the field, getting a touchdown, go 24-17, and they ended up winning. It ended up being the game-winning drive. Same thing. Almost the exact same play happened with Skyler, where it was almost the same formation for K-State. Same type of run. Up the gut, he ran it, and he said he got them in position to get that game-winning touchdown from that run. So really 2 years in a row, K-State has gashed TCU with a similar play. It will be interesting to see next year if they, you know, maybe adjust to that, or that's going to be there again, and K-State will be able to take advantage. But for K-State offensively, Eddie, it's hard for me to really criticize Courtney Messingham as much as I did in that TCU game, just to kind of piggyback on what I was saying last week, earlier in the podcast and last week, both. Against Texas Tech, I felt like there were plays there to be had for K-State. I really did. And I just felt like they weren't taking them. I just felt like they were protecting Will Howard, and they were like, you know, let's just hold on. You know, let's just find a way to hold on. And Texas Tech's offense was gaining steam. They were gaining momentum. They were beginning to take the game over.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my concern, is like, look, if you want to win this game, you got to open the playbook up. You got to do it. And they did just enough. They opened it up like just enough to be able to get that game. In this game, I felt a little bit different. Number one, because K-State didn't have as many weapons available. I don't even think weapons is that's almost an insult to the word weapons to say this. Weapons available at receiver, because they've had like no weapons at receiver all year long. But they didn't have as much available at receiver this game as they did against Texas Tech. And then the guys that were available, they just couldn't get open. TCU was pressing, playing some really nice press coverage, and K-State just could not get separation. And so you look at that, you look at the fact that K-State, running the ball, Deuce averaged 3.1 yards a carry, Harry Trotter averaged 3.4 yards a carry. So, I mean, they weren't getting chunk yards on running plays, and so it was difficult. You know, you were kind of in a difficult spot. Your defense was playing so dominant, and K-State felt like they had total control of the game. It was difficult to try to figure out what exactly K-State should do there. Do you want to risk it with these receivers? Do you want to just try to play it safe and put it on the back of your defense, especially once you have 21-7? And, you know, K-State ultimately decided, we're going to play this conservative. They played a little too conservative for my, my personal opinion. But at the same time, I understand why they did what they did, because the K-State defense was so dominant and they bullied TCU. It's really the best word to use. They were bullying them. And TCU, they knocked TCU out of their entire game plan. And I think K-State knew that. So it was totally different situation from the Texas Tech game. I think it was a lot easier to justify why they went conservative once they got a 21-7. I got to give Will Howard credit, though, Eddie, because, he was really poised. He was really poised in the game. He threw an interception on it wasn't a very good ball. I can't remember if it was a post route or what it was, but he...
It looked like a post route.
Yeah, I think it was a post route. He overshot it or something, and it got picked off. But he came back and he fired it. He fired one down the field, and that was encouraging to me that he was able to flush that interception, and he didn't let it affect his next play. He came out and he fired a throw in, which shows me that he's got confidence in himself and his abilities, and he has to have that confidence. That's important. For him to be able to do that. And look, he also made a couple really nice throws at him. And I think that those kind of get lost as well in this game where people see only 8 completions. But first off, the throw to Deuce on the 45-yard play was just a beauty. That had to be in the perfect spot. He had to drop it over a defender into Deuce's breadbasket.
That reminded me a little bit about last week, the game winner.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the thing was, you had to just drop it in like an NBA 3-pointer, man. I mean, that thing had to be high. That thing had to drop over that defender, or it would have been picked off. And he nailed it. It was a perfect throw for a huge play. So got to give him credit for there. Obviously, got to give him credit for the run, the 80-yard run as well. That was I know that he said he would have liked to score there, but. I don't really know if there was really any opportunity for him to score there, because TCU did have a couple defenders back. But either way, it was a great great run there. And then he had a throw to Briley Moore that I'm still trying to figure out right now how it was considered an incompletion, down to the 1-yard line where he just dropped a beautiful ball. I think Briley might have even been double covered on the play. If it wasn't double covered and it was single coverage, it was really good coverage. And he just, once again, just dropped right into Briley Moore, over the shoulder. Briley got it, went down to the one. Like I said, his knee was down, and then he had the ball, and then he rolled, and it popped out, and they called it incomplete. And you know, they said he was incomplete because he didn't make a football move, but I don't know how you make a football move once you're down by conduct, once you're down. So I couldn't figure that one out. Once again, I don't think it's the official. I think the officials called it correctly. It's more the rule. I really don't understand. I don't understand how you can make a football move, Eddie, when you catch the ball and then you go down. Play's over right there. Whatever. Anyway, Boyd Bing was a perfect threat. Perfect throw by Will Howard. So he had his moments, Eddie, where he was dropping some dimes in there. And that's encouraging. That's encouraging to see that he has the ability to make some of these throws that, no offense to Skyler, but he made a couple of throws that you don't necessarily see Skyler make. And I think that one to Briley was a perfect one. Yeah, Skyler, I've seen Skyler make that throw before. More times than not, he doesn't. And I think that it's something that Will Howard has in his game that he can really utilize. Skyler may not, where he can just drop those balls over that coverage and defense and just put it right on that receiver. And so he did that a couple times, and that was encouraging to see. He was really poised, and you listen to him after the game, and he sounded, like a guy that, I shouldn't say guy, he looks like a kid, whatever you want to call it. A player that, he understands it. He understands his role right now. He understands that, they just needed to do what they had to do to come out here and get a win. And I thought that, they found a way to execute it. You knew that TCU was going to key in on Deuce Vaughn. You knew that was going to happen. And they did. And that was another thing that made things a little more difficult for K-State. Especially because at running back, I'm not exactly sure, but for some reason the coaches just aren't confident in Arcadia Wright right now for whatever reason. I'm not sure why. And it's not a slight Harry Trotter. Harry Trotter does a lot of nice things. He's a good blocker. He can get you some good yardage in the red zone, but I don't know. I don't understand personally why Arcadia Wright's not getting touches, but clearly the coaches aren't comfortable with them, and they probably know better than me, so... I think it's hurting K-State they can't run in between the tackles. I'm getting kind of annoyed seeing them trying to run Deuce in between the tackles because that's not his game. And number one, you're putting a beating on him. I said this last week. You're putting a beating on him, number one. And number two, that's not his strength. His strength is on the boundaries, not in between the tackles. And I tweeted it last week, and I tweeted it again this week. So I was not a big fan of K-State's running schemes. I just don't understand why you're running Deuce in between the tackles when that's not his game, and it's a good way to get him banged up. I just don't understand why you do that. I mean, if you want to run him between the tackles, do it with Tyler Burns, do it with Harry Trotter, do it with one of those guys. If you don't have confidence in Arcadia Wright, fine. That's fine. But do it with Trotter or Burns. I don't like seeing Deuce Vaughn getting runs in between the tackles. I mean, you're going to have to run in between the tackles here every now and again, Eddie, to keep the defense honest. And I understand that. I understand that he's going to have to get carries every now and again there. But to give him a bunch of carries in between the tackles, it doesn't play to his strength, number one. And number two, it's just a good way to get him banged up. So I didn't like that. I'd like to see K-State readjust some of the things that they do in the run game and get Deuce the ball in open space or on the boundaries. Or if they want to run him between the tackles, kind of find a way to work it in better, not make it so predictable. So I wasn't a big fan of the way that they ran the ball. And then just a touch on the receiver aspect that you touched on. You gotta give DJ Ritter credit. He has 24 yards. He came in, he did the best that he could. I have heard good things about DJ Ritter. You really can't ask for anything more from him, but Sebastian Taylor, I think we mentioned it last week, he's going to be a big part of this offense. He's going to have to find a way to, do a little better than 2 receptions and 10 yards. Obviously the circumstances were a little odd this game, but, he's going to have to do a little better there. After the game, Chris Wyman said that he heard that Malik Knowles and Joshua Youngblood and those guys just weren't available, and he didn't know what was going on. He needs to, K-State needs to figure it out. They need to figure it out at receiver. It's just that simple, Eddie, because it's fun. It's great to be able to talk about K-State being 3-0 in the Big 12. And, hey, this team has a chance to compete for a spot in Arlington. That's a really fun conversation to be able to have. But it's going to be a moot point. And we're going to be wasting our time talking about it if K-State does not get more production from the receiving corps. If Joshua Youngblood and Malik Knowles cannot figure it out, K-State's not going to play for a Big 12 championship, period. It's that simple. If I look like an idiot at the end of the year for saying that, fine, we can throw it in my face. But I can't see any scenario where K-State, with the lack of production that they're getting at wide receiver right now, you can't sustain that, in my opinion, for 10, or in this case, 9, for 9 Big 12 games. Do you go against Oklahoma State? I mean, you think K-State's going to be able to do this against Oklahoma State? I mean, you think K-State's going to be able to do this against Iowa State on the road? No. This is not going to fly. And with that said, I think K-State knows that. And I expect during the bye week that they will work on fine-tuning that offense, trying to change some things, tailor the playbook a little bit more to Will Howard and his game. And then hopefully it gives the receivers a chance to get healthy. Because if K-State can get Malik Knowles playing the way that he's capable of, they can get Joshua Youngblood playing the way that he's capable of, and they get him healthy, and then they get Sebastian Taylor doing what he does, and Phillip Brooks get him in there and doing what he can do, then K-State can have something nice there, especially with Briley Moore at tight end, who's proven to be one of their best offensive weapons, who also in this game did have 2 receptions for 38 yards. But K-State's they're going to have to find a way to get that going. We'll talk about Kansas more next week, but that's going to be, in my opinion, going to be really big for K-State to try to get the offense going against KU. It's a great opportunity for them to get feeling good about themselves offensively if they can hang 30-some on the board against it. So, but going with the grade, Eddie, I'm with you. It's a C for me for the offense. They did enough against TCU, and I thought that they did some really nice things. But the fact of the matter is, the way that they've played in this game offensively and the way that they played in the second half against TCU, it's not a formula for sustained success in Big 12 football. And I think K-State knows that. I do think that that's something that they'll try to address. But in this game, I'm going to give them a C. Looking over to special teams, Eddie, I'm going to go ahead and give them a B+. That block kick was huge. I know it was huge for K-State to be able to get that block kick, keep it at a touchdown game. And then the punt, that punt was enormous. That 65-yard bomb that was, I believe that one was thrown. That was Zentner, who had the 65-yard bomb. So and it was just a beauty. Pin him down there at the 8. K-State's been doing a really good job at winning that field possession. It's so important that pin the team's feet, pin the opponent deep, and then be able to win the field possession game. The K-State punters have been giving them a chance to do that for the most part this season, and that was another big thing in this game. It seemed like TCU was beginning a lot of drives inside the 20-yard line, and that's a big deal. So I'm going to go ahead and give them a B+.
That was, all right. Yeah, that was a lot to unpack there. We gave the offense.
I had a lot to say, Eddie.
Who really didn't need much, a lot there. But yeah, you hit on a couple of things, and we'll definitely touch base on it next week on the podcast during the bye when we talk KU We're gonna take a quick break. On the other side of this break, we'll definitely talk about the defense real quick. Also, the Big 12 had a couple of games yesterday as well. I want to get to that as well. And I have some breaking news here, so I'll get to that here after this.
Welcome back to the Land of the Purple. Welcome. You're listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Get
K-State 3-0 in Big 12 play, 3-1 overall heading into the bye week. And then next week, the lonely Jayhawks come in to Bill Snyder Family Stadium. Yeah, I mentioned I have some breaking news. I do have some breaking news real quick, so I don't want to talk about it too much because we want to talk about the defense. So ask and you shall receive. So Thomas Dimitroff is also gone. You're fired. So, as of 20 minutes ago, I just hopped on while you're chatting there. I'm doing triple duty here. So, yeah, Thomas Dimitroff also packing the bags up tonight. And see you later. Don't let the door hit the way out. So, both Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff on recording this podcast, gone. Fired. 0-5. I'm a fan of an 0-5 football team. That's disappointing to say, but it's got to be done. Got to do what you need to do. So, interim coach for the Falcons will be announced tomorrow at some point. So, that one of the reporters came up with that tweet. So, yep, ask and you shall receive. So, both of those guys, like I said, it's a package deal, right? So, they are gone. So, yeah. So, that's the end of that. So, hopefully, moving forward, it'll be interesting to see what the Falcons do. Hopefully, they can keep some of these pieces that have been in Atlanta for a long time. So, I'm looking forward now to seeing the new steps here going forward. And hopefully, yeah, the season's already over for us anyways. So, when we're 0-2. So, that's that. I just wanted to point that out. Finished off my thoughts since we talked about that, since you kind of brought it up anyway, so finish it right there. All right, so the K-State defense. Now, defense was on rails yesterday, and we kind of mentioned them a little bit here on the podcast, here on tonight's edition of the podcast. Here, they let Max Duggan up. They bullied, like you said. That's the perfect word on this podcast tonight. They bullied Max Duggan. Max Duggan on like numerous plays after getting up, grimacing, they zoomed on his face. Man, he was looked like he was in a lot of pain. He's gonna be feeling that on Monday morning, or really, he's still feeling that tonight. The hits that he took on, and one that really stood out to me on Max Duggan was the Elijah Sullivan hit.
Oh,
I felt that one through the TV set. So that hit knocked him out for a little bit. And then TCU brought their backup quarterback in, J.D. Spellman. No, that's J.D. Spellman. Yeah, he was in. Then it was Matthew Downing. Yeah, Matthew Downing, he had the interception there. A.J. Parker, pick six. And it turned out to be, like we talked about, the difference maker of the game. The defense played lights out yesterday. There's just no doubt about it. Bronson Massey, A.J. Parker, Elijah Sullivan tied for six tackles in this game. Massey had a sack. Bronson Massey started to come on his own, too. So, I mean, we're sitting here talking about a Khalid Duke, Wyatt Hubert. We better give some praise to Bronson Massey a little bit now.
Oh, yeah.
He's starting to really step it up here. And that's just one of the pieces that you're talking about, this depth that I talked about in the TCU Preview podcast. This depth starting to come along here. These guys are going to benefit from it. And Chris Kleiman, his coaching staff, are finding these guys and they're putting them in different positions from their normal positions. And it is really starting to pay off. And it's going to be huge gain going forward in the season, whether or not K-State is competitive enough. That's depending on their offense to get to the Big 12 title or not. But it is going forward, I mean, it's going to be a big difference in this game. And I thought Cody Fletcher, we talked about him last week on the podcast, Alex. Four tackles in the game. I thought it was more than that. He was all over the field. Once again, Daniel Green, again, he also had a sack in the game as well. So, I mean, you have these guys starting to step up in a game in the K-State deep. This is what going into season this K-State deep was supposed to do, right? Be effective, be dominant up front, cause some havoc, make plays, and they're starting to come around here in 2020. They get the bye week now, and again, we get Lonely KU next week, not this week, but next week on homecoming, so that's going to be really fun for us.
Really fun or really miserable.
Yep.
I'm hoping the fun part.
The fun part. So, yeah, the Wildcats defense was tremendous in this game. Of course, Max Duggan here. I'm going to scroll back up here real fast. Max Duggan, 19 of 31 for .54. No TDs or interceptions. And Devin Barlow, your rushing leader for TCU, 8 carries for 56. Max Duggan, 15 carries for 43 yards on the ground for an average of, according to, 2 point, just under 3 yards a pop. So they had to slow Max Duggan down in the running game. They did that. They hit Max Duggan. They did that. So Blair Conright, leading receiver at TCU, 6 grabs or 60 yards in this ball game here, and K-State holding TCU to under 400 yards total, 400 yards total on offense, 342 to be exact. Rushing yards just under 200, pass yards only 153 yards. TCU was penalized five times for 38 yards, 20 first downs, 5 of 17. Great job on third down defense. That's kind of what I want to circle back to. I mean, I think you mentioned it on the last episode of the podcast, getting off the field, getting stops, and they did that here against TCU once again here. And of course, we've talked about it already tonight on the Purple Project podcast on this episode, the pick six by A.J. Parker in front of the backup quarterback there, and taking it to the house right there. So I'm going to go straight into the grade, not mess around too much, because I know I want to get to Chris Kleiman in the Big 12. So, man, I got to give them an A. I mean, TCU had some garbage yards late in the game, but I'll say it again, K-State defense can play this consistently on defense. They can keep K-State in a lot of ball games, especially with a freshman quarterback, Will Howard, trying to get learning offense and getting more reps. So if they can keep playing like this, they're gonna cause fits for everybody else. Sorry, KU and West Virginia, you're next on the list there. But K-State, wonderful, great job by Joe Klineman. I gave him a hard time during the Arkansas State podcast there. Not enough aggressiveness in that game. And all of a sudden, since then, he's starting to come on to his own in that defensive coordinator slot there. So, K-State and A there. Alex, what are your overall thoughts on the defense yesterday?
Yeah, well, first off, I will keep the defense shorter than I did the offense. I don't have quite as much to say about the defense, because honestly, you touched on a majority of it there. My first thought, Eddie, was watching this defense, just thinking, man, like, we gave up 35 points to Arkansas State. Like, interesting. Like, we gave up 35 to Oklahoma, and gave up 21 to Tech, and we gave up 14 to TCU. These are good offenses, Eddie. These are good offenses, and mm-hmm. the defense is just getting better every single game, which is so incredibly encouraging. And boy, it makes you want to really get a do-over with Arkansas.
Yeah, I want a redo.
Oh my gosh, yeah, you want a redo so bad because you it's hard to understand how this team lost to Arkansas State because the way the defense is playing now, we knew the K-State was really, there were a lot of things going against them in that Arkansas State game, but man, it just makes you scratch your head even that much more because the defense looks so bad. It looks so bad.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
I think for starters, you've got to give the coaching staff credit for what they've done with A.J. Parker looking at that first game where he did not look very good. They put him in, I said this, they put him in bad positions.
Yep.
And it wasn't fair. He didn't have the size. He didn't have the physicality. It wasn't a fair matchup. And they didn't get him proper help they need. Well, they've slid him into the nickel full time, and he seems to really be back to AJ Parker that we know in the nickel. And then they're going Boydo and Gardner on the edges, and it's a formula that works. And if I'm K-State, I don't touch that formula right now.
No.
I don't care who gets healthy. I don't care what goes on. I like Parker and the nickel. I like Boydo and Gardner, what they're doing on the outside. And I leave it, and I let it be, because those guys are getting comfortable in their roles, and they're making big plays, all three of them. I saw Boydo make big plays yet again, third week in a row, where I've seen some big plays from him. And every game I've seen, Justin Gardner make just a huge play at some point in the game, and he had another amazing pass breakup.
He did, yes. Game. Yes, he did, yeah.
Oh, it was a beautiful one, a deep ball down the field on the sideline. The way that he caught up to that ball and got his hand in there and knocked it away, it was a really, really pretty play. And A.J. Parker is just flourishing right now in that nickel spot. So credit to the coaching staff and Joe Klanderman and what they're doing. Putting guys in position to succeed, that is such an important thing to do. It's one thing to have the talent. It's another thing to be able to put them in positions where they can actually use that talent and be successful with it. So K-State seems to be doing that. Defensively, we had seen them take strides against Oklahoma, but especially in the second half of Oklahoma. And then Texas Tech, shutting out Texas Tech in the first half, holding them to 21 points in the game. That was huge. But they still did almost give up 500 yards. It's why they didn't get an A grade for me last week. It was simply because they gave too many yards. And look, in this game, they cut that down. They gave up 260-some yards in this game total. And, I believe it was 260-some total. I don't have it up. In front of me, it was, I am lying, Eddie, they get a 342. Still, 342, I don't know where I got 260-something. 342, still, 342 is not 470. It's not 500. It's a huge step in the right direction for them to be able to cut down on the yards. And you're right, Eddie, a bunch of those yards were garbage time yards late. When they were down 21-7, K-State was playing some prevent D. They wanted to run the clock so TCU was able to go down and get the score where they got the touchdown 3.5 minutes left. And then they went like 60 yards before they heaved the Hail Mary, or 50 yards before they heaved that Hail Mary. So they got probably about half their yards in those final two drives. So it wasn't very indicative of what K-State did defensively. But they bullied them. We've said the word multiple times in this, but that's what they did. Man, they made Max Duggan feel it. Some of the hits that they put on him. Big-time hits. That's what you want to see. You don't want to see anybody get hurt. You never want to see that. But you want to make them uncomfortable. And what K-State did is they made TCU uncomfortable. They made their quarterback uncomfortable. They made their off offense as a whole uncomfortable, and they made the coaching staff go away from their game plan because they were timid and they were nervous of how K-State would beat them. And to see K-State's defense single-handedly just essentially swallow up the entire TCU game plan is just so incredibly impressive. I can't even begin to say it, because the coaches were coaching timid and the players were playing timid because they were scared of K-State, because K-State was being so dominant on defense and just bullying them around. They were taking their lunch money, Eddie, all game long. They took their lunch money, and they were going, and they were getting Twinkies with it, and they were having themselves a good old time. That's what they were doing, and that's as impressive as a K-State defensive performance as I can remember in a while. Super impressive, and they needed it. That's the biggest thing, is they needed that defensive performance in this game. They were going to need a performance like that to win this game in TCU. That's why I had them losing. It's because I just didn't know if they could do that, and I knew that's what they would need. So, but they did. They did it. You got to give them credit. And look, we have matching grades this week, Eddie, because I guess not totally, because our special teams grades were a little off. But we have matching offensive defensive grades. We both gave a C on offense, and we're both giving an A on defense, because that is absolutely, in my opinion, what that K-State defense did, is an A-quality type of performance in the Big 12 on the road to give up 14 points, to give up 300-some total yards, to bully an offense like that. And look, TCU's got a good offense, Eddie. I'm not saying that they've got the best offense in the Big 12, but it's not a bad offense. Max Duggan's a good player. They've got weapons. They've got speed. And I think that was the most impressive thing, Eddie, was that K-State was, people probably get sick of hearing me saying it, they were able to get home with four. The fact that they got home with four, they could drop back seven, was just so big, because they didn't have to send extra guys, which opened up holes on the back end for TCU to exploit. It just was never there for them. And K-State needs credit for that. Now, K-State's plan, according to Coach Clyden, was to drop the defense back, and that they were not going to let TCU beat them over the top. They were going to play some zone coverage, and they were going to make TCU beat them underneath, and that's exactly what they did, and TCU couldn't do it. You've got to give Joe Klanderman credit for the defensive game plan that he had in this game, because it worked to a T, and we gave Joe Klanderman a lot of grief after that first game, and oh, man. Was that a bad idea going to Joe Klanderman? We thought this would be some great hire. What's happened? He's not doing what we thought we'd see him do. He's not doing the things that Scott Hazleton did. Well, I believe we see Joe Klanderman now doing some of the things that we expected him to do. This is more of what I expected from K-State's defense. What we saw last week against Texas Tech is more of what I expected from this K-State defense. So, are they going to be this good every week? No, of course they're not going to be this good every week, but it was encouraging to see that, because K-State, they're better than what we saw week one, and then what we saw in the first half against Oklahoma. They're better than that. We knew they were better than that defensively, even with the guys down. And so to see them cashing in, making plays, making offenses uncomfortable, that's important. So, going to give them an A.
Listening to the Purple Project Podcast.
One note on Justin Garner, Eddie Greer, out in the Purple Project Podcast. Couple of K-State alums / Wildcat 91.9 alums, the radio school, student radio station on campus as well. One note on Justin Garner here real quick. Big game by Justin once again on the road yesterday. Four pass breakups, including that big one early in the game that looked like it was going to be a big game or close to a touchdown. Made a big play there. It was the first time since a Wildcat batted away four passes in a game. And you have to go back just only a couple years to Kevion McGee, a familiar name. Had four against South Dakota going back to 2018, so not too far. Kevion McGee that year had four pass breakups against South Dakota. Justin Garner started to make his presence known in that secondary. And like I said, that depth is starting to show up a little bit. So it's just going to continue to get better. Yes, they're going to give up some plays, but that depth is going to continue to show up in these games. Justin Gardner is making the most of his opportunity. And let's not forget about T.J. Smith, who also played in this game yesterday, who was all over the field against Tech yesterday. So put a bow on it. Purple Project Podcast. Battle of Purples. Too much purple in this podcast. K-State 21, TCU 14. K-State, this was obviously, we both said it, huge win to get over TCU, to put themselves still tied for a three-way top of the Big 12. Now you get the bye weekend, give some guys some rest, and give some guys some more reps, practice reps. That includes freshman quarterback Will Howard. It's going to be interesting. Again, we will talk KU next week, and might have some basketball talk in there as well on next week's podcast. There will be no preview show this week because of a bye week. So, and next week it will be the preview show all in one. So, I'll be on for that. So, we're looking forward to talking against KU and probably some Bruce Weber in there also. So, all right. Yeah, what's up? Go ahead.
Bruce had some interesting things to say this last week. So, yeah, I look forward to breaking down some basketball combo, because little basketball is right around the corner, and it's October, and as crazy as this year has been, and it feels like football just began, because we got the late start, basketball is only, a month away, a month and a half away, it's next month, point being, it's next month, so it's right around the corner.
That's correct, that is right around the corner. So I talked about it a little bit in the preview, TCU preview podcast a little bit. The Little Apple tournament's been set as well. So we'll definitely talk about that and more on next week's edition of the podcast. So, all right. So we both kind of already said Chris Kleiman comments. I know I said my piece on a TCU podcast, TCU preview show. I will leave that there. Alex just says his piece there. So last topic we'll talk about is the Big 12 here, wrap up the Purple Project Podcast to see what's up. So there are just two games. Obviously, Iowa State, one of K-State's undefeated opponents, 31-15 over last week's opponent, Texas Tech. They're in the game. Brock Purdy, 32-43 for just over 300 yards, 302 with two touchdowns. Henry Columbi, who played a lot in this game. We saw, and then Alan Bowman apparently played in this game also. But Columbi with the numbers, 10 of 12, 115 yards and a touchdown. Alan Bowman only 13 of 22 for 97 yards in this one. Breece Hall, Iowa State, 135 on the ground. Xavier Hutchinson for Iowa State, 9 catches for 77 yards in this one. Xavier White, who had a touchdown run against K-State, 7 carries for 21 yards. And then I'm going to butcher his last name again, Eric Izunama, 5 catches for 61 yards. Texas Tech still winless in the conference. They fall 1-3, 0-3 in the conference. And then, of course, Iowa can say the same thing for Iowa State, mirroring K-State or hated neighbors from Iowa. They start with a loss with a Sun Belt team. They've rooted off 3 in a row in conference play there. So, interesting there. And then, of course, Alex, my goodness. Texas, Oklahoma, the Red River Shootout, another classic game. And Texas falling to Oklahoma. Oklahoma at one point had a big lead in this game, allowing Texas to battle back in this game and forcing overtime. This game, Alex, 4 overtime game, 53-45. Oklahoma avoids the cellar and gets the win there. Texas had multiple opportunities to put this game away. Well, really, Oklahoma first had a chance to put this game away, but they still don't got a defense. OU still doesn't have defense, people. Even they've had like 3 different defensive coordinators, and still their defense ain't right. Something's not right there. Texas And you talked about a little bit on last week's podcast, Alex. I don't know why they're still ranked in. They should not be ranked. Do not tell me that Texas is going to be ranked 2-2 after this ball game. Do not tell me that, or I'm going to go crazy. Oklahoma was not ranked there, so. But yeah, the big story in this game. Obviously, we're closing it out the podcast with this. Spencer Rattler getting a bench apparently in this ball game, and being brought back in to apparently OU to the thrilling victory there. Sam Ehlinger threw over 53 pass attempts, 287 yards, 2 touchdowns. TJ Pledger on the ground for Oklahoma, over 131 yards, 2 touchdowns, and Joshua Moore went off for Texas, 8 receptions for 83 yards and a touchdown. I want to go circle back to Spencer Rattler here real fast. Spencer Rattler, 23 for 35, just for 209. Did have that interception, 3 touchdown passes. So apparently the benching worked there as Oklahoma avoids going 0-3 in this game. So yeah, both of these teams, 2-2. And like I said at the top of the podcast, this Big 12 is turned upside down in the standings. Iowa State, Oklahoma State, K-State, and I want to get this in here real quick. I want to throw a shout to ESPN. All y'all picked TCU to win this ball game. Shame on y'all. I thought at least one of y'all would pick K-State. Hell no, y'all didn't. So once again, ESPN, College Game Day guys, got it wrong once again. Picking against K-State, and K-State made y'all look stupid. So yeah, thanks to ESPN for that. I appreciate that. So Alex, you take the floor. What are your thoughts on OU Texas yesterday, and any other thoughts on the conference?
Yeah. First off, can't believe I didn't bring this up earlier. Actually, with the new rankings that came out today, Texas is no longer ranked. So that will make you feel better, Eddie. Neither Texas nor Oklahoma is ranked, nor should either one of those teams be ranked at the moment, based on the way that they've played in their first 4 games. Now, I think that each team will find their way back in the rankings, I would assume, because they do have some. Some winnable games on the schedule for them.
we'll see.
we'll ultimately see. But either way, neither one of them is ranked. K-State is ranked now. They are number 22 in both polls. So Iowa State's 20, and Oklahoma State is 7. So I just want to say it's a ways out, but K-State... they have the bye, but we mentioned their next 2 games are against KU and West Virginia. K-State has a chance, depending on what happens these next 3 weeks, to be able to get another top 10 win and be able to put that in the, you know, another notch in the belt for them. So, you know, they do have that opportunity, depending on what happens with Oklahoma State. Granted, as we already know, 3 weeks in the Big 12, who the heck, tons can happen in three weeks in the Big 12. But K-State 22, so it's good to see them. I think they should have probably cracked in it last week, but good to see that they're in there now at least. With what happened last week, first off, K-State and Iowa State are practically just carbon copies of each other. They both lost to a Sun Belt team the first week, and they have now both beaten Texas Tech, Oklahoma, and TCU. Exact 3 same Big 12 teams. They've beaten the same 3 Big 12 teams. They both lost to a Sun Belt team in the opening week. So they're literally like the exact same team right now. So you know, that's just, I think that's just kind of ironic. And for all the jokes, Eddie, that I make about TCU and how they're the kings of 7-5, because they are the kings of 7-5, Eddie. I mean, they are. They're the kings of 7-5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Despite being the kings of 7-5, they're a good team. They're a dangerous team. They're going to be in the mix K-State's going to have their hands full trying to overcome Iowa State. Look, Iowa State's got more talent on their team. Oklahoma State's got more talent on the team. Both those teams have more talent on their teams than K-State does. I think we all know that. So what it comes down to is coaching. And personally, I believe K-State has a better coaching than Iowa State. And I think that there's a possibility that K-State may have better coaching than Oklahoma State as well. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, kind of the way that, you know, that kind of plays out. Mike Gundy's a heck of a coach, but we talked about it. He's had a bit of a roller coaster offseason with that Oklahoma State crew. And yes, Oklahoma State is ranked number 7, but let's also keep in mind that they've only played 2 games, and one of their wins was the ugliest win I have ever seen in that first game. I can't even remember who that was against. Was it Tulsa? I think it was Tulsa. I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it was Tulsa in that first win that they had. Either way, it was ugly. You and I talked about that at the podcast. And then their second win was against West Virginia at home. I believe that was at home. So, obviously, that's good, you know, good for them to beat. But it wasn't a blowout. I think it was 27-13. So, you know, it was a nice win, but it wasn't anything like knocked your socks off. So, they're number 7 a little more by default than anything, Eddie, in this weird season. So we'll see what happens with Oklahoma State. Iowa State's obviously impressed me much more than Oklahoma State because they've beaten Oklahoma as well. They've controlled Texas Tech this last game, and they beat TCU on the road. So then, you know, they've done nice things. You do have to give Iowa State credit for that. They look great. We talked about Brees Hall and the job that he's done. Brock Purdy's a beast at quarterback. It's a good team. They got an explosive team, and they showed it off. They just manhandled Tech. They just manhandled them. Really impressed with what they did. And then the Texas-Oklahoma game was just a barn burner. Now, both teams made tons of mistakes. Just tons of mistakes, Eddie. It was not a mistake-free game by any stretch of the imagination. Each team had plenty of opportunities to win it and did not take advantage. But it was still an amazing game. Oklahoma came out victorious. I think Oklahoma is a better team of those teams. And Spencer Rattler, I think that was the takeaway for me was the way he responded when he got benched. He came back, had a really good second half. I think that sets the tone, Eddie, for Oklahoma and the rest. Things just weren't looking good for them. You know, they lose to K-State, they lose to Iowa State. Don't look good in the first half against Texas. Spencer Rattler gets benched. But, you know, he comes back in, he plays a lot better, and they get an emotional win, and the team is super pumped, and they're super juiced after that game. And, you know, I think it could be the beginning of Oklahoma getting going. You know, they got a couple road games. They go to TCU in their next game on the 24th, and then they go to the road on Halloween. To Texas Tech. So they got a couple road games, but I think that it's a couple winnable road games for them. And then they come home against KU, and so at home, before they play Oklahoma State. So I think Oklahoma has the potential to rattle off three wins before that good game against Oklahoma State. So, you know, the Big 12's not as strong as it's maybe been in the past, Eddie, but it's still early. And, you know, we'll see what happens, and ultimately. It's such a wonky year. It's so hard to even predict what's going to happen in these next 7-8 weeks, whatever it is. But I'm with you. Last thing I want to hear is anything about a throwaway season, because it's not a throwaway season. This is another good season. You know, there's a lot on the line. These Big 12 teams are playing like it, and I'm excited to see what happens in the coming weeks.
Yeah, that's for sure. And just looking at next week's sleep before we cloak, put a bow on this Purple Project podcast. K-State knocking off TCU yesterday. Okay, so Oklahoma State, Baylor postponed. So we'll have to. Also, I'm interested in this Oklahoma State deal here because, yeah, there's obviously the whole Baylor situation there. The only game on the Big 12 slate, obviously, our opponent in 2 weeks. KU on the road against 2-1 West Virginia. And I'm just sitting here thinking that West Virginia game for K-State could loom large in a few weeks, Alex. So So, and then obviously the taste of losing to them last year that we should have beat him here in Bill Starr Family Stadium still stings. But that game, I again, don't want to look too far, but these are our two next opponents right here. KU and West Virginia. And that game against West Virginia could be even bigger than TCU yesterday. So each game for K-State gets, I mean, don't want to treat any game than any other one, but keeps getting larger and larger here. They're going to be competitive. They're going to need plays on the offensive side of the ball. The defense continues to get better. So yeah, KU, West Virginia, and that's the 11 o'clock game next Saturday. So again, no preview show this week on the Pro Project because there's no game for K-State. We're off, and then we'll be back next week with, of course, KU, Bruce Weber, and yeah, we'll probably talk about KU's game against West Virginia a little bit and preview KU a little bit. So a lot on the plate this week and next week for the show. So man, this has been another good show, victory show here in the Purple Project Podcast. K-State coming on top against TCU, getting the Purple Project Podcast. You can find it wherever you listen to your podcast. Again, Amazon Music, Purple Project Podcast on that as well. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. Alex, been a good show, my friend.
It's been a good show, Eddie. I'll just end it with saying, just piggybacking off what you said, every game you win, it makes every game just that much bigger. And if K-State continues to be able to get wins, every game's just going to end up becoming that much bigger. And it's going to really create something interesting. And not looking ahead too far to that West Virginia game, but that's a game, Eddie. If they beat KU and then they drop to West Virginia, regardless of the fact that they may be very well maybe 3-1 and 2-1 in Big 12 play, that would be a disappointment, most likely, if K-State goes and gets a win against KU. Because, look, when you win those games, Eddie, you're raising that bar higher and higher for you.
Yep.
You're setting that the expectations higher. So, you know, and after what happened last year against West Virginia, I don't think people want to see another loss to them. Either way, gonna enjoy the TCU win.
Yes.
Players are smart over the bye week. They don't put themselves in positions to possibly pick up COVID, and hopefully they can make the adjustments that are needed. And then we have plenty to break down next week against KU, because even though it's a game that K-State should win, there's a lot of things that K-State to address about that game next week. So eager to talk to you about that next week.
All right, yeah, you also big important thing reminded us all. Yep, K-State's got to be smart again. Let's all celebrate it, but again, be smart again. Have to bring in this pandemic situation again. So again, I mean, be smart. Let's enjoy it. Let's get ready for KU in a couple of weeks, folks. That's gonna wrap things up for the Pro Project Podcast this week. Go Cats! Huge victory over TC, the Battle of Purples belong to our Cats. 21-14. We're still tied for first in the Big 12 for Alex and Eddie Greer III. We are signing off. Go Cats!
listening to the Purple Project Podcast. Get it wherever podcasts are found on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom, and more. We'll talk to you on the next edition of the Purple Project Podcast.